Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 411. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How about yourself?
I cannot argue. I just watched a brutal knockout Alexander Gustafsson taking out Glover Teixeira in the fifth round was one of the rougher looking ones I've seen. And then him proposing to his girlfriend, now fiance, is hilarious right after that happening.
Yeah, you
go from something that ugly to something that that beautiful, so to speak. But one thing that was also brutal to me was the level of the hometown curse. Not that it does actually happen on all occasions, but there is certainly a heavy loss to win ratio for any one person wrestling in their hometown.
Oh yeah, they love to have people lose in their hometowns. They think it builds heat, although considering they only go to certain towns maybe twice a year, three or four times at most, I'm not sure what kind of heat / momentum you're really building up. It's silly. It really is. I mean, you could certainly argue that Dolph Ziggler needs something going into Money in the Bank, so maybe it's worth doing. But it's Dolph Ziggler, and they had.
Yeah.
Not that the reaction for AJ Styles I thought was that overwhelming in Atlanta, because technically he's not actually from Atlanta.
Oh, but correct.
But still,
It was I
would have put, again, there's too much 50-50 booking as it is. Too many people doing jobs who shouldn't be. AJ Styles should not be losing to Dolph Ziggler at this point. Period.
That's what I was like. When I saw him win, I was like, I rewound it, and I was like, did I really just see that? Like, I thought Dolph Ziggler was dead. Like, you guys made him dead, like, a year plus ago. Like, why are you making him a thing now? Like, I am so confused.
And he won't be a thing after Money in the Bank, let's be honest here. It's we gotta start protecting some people. Some people need to go on some streaks and get a series of wins going and be protected. There needs to be parity. One guy, certain people need to be a rung higher than other guys. Even in a situation where going into this Money in the Bank thing, everyone knows Dolph's just in there to take some bumps. He's just there to be a body to take some bumps. He doesn't need to be beating AJ Styles.
No, he can get a win over someone else. Well, I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of who else is in the equation.
He could be Sami Zayn, I guess.
Or just someone that ends up having some type of a distraction of some nature and getting a win over them because of some other feud that's going on. That's always a good tradition, but the fact that it was basically a clean loss was the thing that was all the more staggering to me. I was like, huh? This isn't even one of those, like, losses where you're just like, oh, well, whatever. You know, the Singh brothers interfered. just
right, yeah. No, you know,
the
no,
first
no,
name
no.
that came to the top of my head.
This was clean as could be.
Yeah, that made it so much more confusing what happened. Yeah, and I agree with you. Like, there is just no reason for that to be happening whatsoever. So, yeah, I mean, that made for an interesting end to Raw, SmackDown Live. What was of equal interest, maybe greater interest, would be the women's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Yeah, that is without a doubt of greater interest and importance here at this point. Something different. The final frontier for women in WWE. They really set it up well. I thought the brawl was great.
Yeah, that was an excellent brawl. Like that was one of those ones that I'm like, man, they are like they really emphasize the. And the announcers do occasionally do a good job. They really emphasize a lot how the match had never started at any point. And everyone was just getting tossed around everywhere. You know, like, no one was really immune to a bump. Charlotte was standing tall, but she had taken something of a beating during the brawl itself.
Yeah. Everyone took their bumps. Everyone had their moments to shine. It felt out of control. It felt chaotic. It didn't feel contrived. It's better than just them having a normal match that somehow gets screwed up somehow. No, it was really well done. Yeah, and sets up the women's Money in the Bank match at Money in the Bank. Yeah, which. But I'm sure by the time we get there, we'll probably feel like the biggest match on the show. Simply because it's just nothing like it's ever happened in WWE before.
Yeah. I mean, I would not be surprised if it's the main event, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no. That wouldn't surprise me at all. No, they did a really good job with it. SmackDown, you know, has always done good by its women. And tonight they really shine through.
Yeah. So that looks pretty cool. And you know, I guess the only thing that's interesting about the whole thing is that Naomi isn't in the match, so it's kind of funny that she came back, but she's still got to kind of sit back and do nothing as champion because. Of the historic match that she's not going to be in.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a historic match she's not going to be in. It makes no sense for them to throw together a new challenger for her because why would anyone get a title shot when all these women have to kill themselves for it? So yeah, no, she gets to sit this one out, and yeah. I guess, you know,
it's probably
still gets paid well for doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's probably best for her body. I would suppose to not have to go to any type of a Money in the Bank type match.
The rest of their bodies have to go through it. Carmella's kind of a twig out there. I'm a little bit interested to see, you know what they have her do, and actually all the women really. It's such a it's uncharted ground here. I mean, other promotions have done it. TNA's done it more than once to absolutely no fanfare and. No net gains at all. So, but it's been done.
Yeah, but I would have to say, and I'm sure that Gail Kim was probably involved. Mickey James may have been involved in TNA's ladder matches. I would have to say that more than likely the overall amount of talent will probably be better in this one.
No, I absolutely feel like, yeah. It'll be presented as something important.
Yeah.
You know, is it the most safe situation to be in? No, but, you know, in this case, you know, it'll feel important. You know, every bump will mean something. and they'll even get paid well for doing it.
Yeah, and I think that they've always, most of the times, people have done a good job of walking the line recently. I think just because, maybe it's just because of the PG rating, maybe they don't have things get quite as outlandish. For the most part, I mean, I know that Shane did the Hell in a Cell jump last year, but it's Shane. You know, I feel like they've at least tried to limit the potential things going wrong in matches like this.
Yeah.
You know, they're obviously there's a higher risk than, you know, other matches. Anytime there's heights involved, it's you know, going to be tricky because there's no telling what happens when you fall from that height. Like you said, though, I mean, it's they're all kind of small, so you know, we'll see what happens. I don't think they'll do anything that's out of their limits, but I think that it'll probably be special in its own way. Like, I like all of the women in the match for the most part. So, and they each kind of play a different role, which makes things kind of interesting.
Because all the personalities all different. Are different. They all have their characters, they all play them well. Yeah. They all do different things and have, you know, different things that they'll bring to the table. Yeah, no, I'm thinking this is going to be, this is going to be fantastic. Unless it just ends up being a clusterfuck, I don't see that this not being something really special.
Yeah, so we got another 3 weeks to that one, I think?
Yeah, we got 3 weeks. Yes, we have three more episodes of SmackDown of the same people wrestling the same people over and over again.
Oh man. What else important happened on I guess the third most important thing on SmackDown to me would be the return of New Day.
Yeah, the New Day, not just the return of New Day, but the debut of the New Day on SmackDown Live. No, really good. I mean, might as well just throw them right into the title picture.
No one else
other people just have had to just, you know, but as we just talked about, go through hell to earn title shots, and then the New Day just shows up and just gets their shot. But, you know,
the Usos have beaten everyone, and I don't know what good it would be for New Day to beat American Alpha. Of course, I'm still confused what happened with them.
Something just didn't click, something just went really wrong there, and I wouldn't have predicted. I would never have predicted that they are persona non grata. They get nothing anymore.
I don't know whose Wheaties they peed in, but. I'm just going to say that it was a little too blatant. Because I guess match quality-wise, I don't think I've seen anything. So, and I don't feel like I've seen any stories about them doing anything bad backstage. So,
right.
You know, that one's just confusing. But to get back to the larger point, though, like, there isn't a whole lot of teams that have credibility on the roster for New Day to beat. The Usos kind of dispatched of Breezango fairly easily. The Colognes had one decent moment on SmackDown, like when they debuted and kind of looked badass. But I think that they've lost two consecutive matches now.
Right,
you know, to go back to a jobber team. I mean, I guess they could beat them again to at least kind of look like they're still on top of the game. But man, there the it's just slim pickings in the SmackDown as well as the women's division has worked. The tag team division, for whatever reason, on SmackDown is mildly worse than the one on Raw.
Yeah, it's definitely worse. But you know, a feud with the New Day and the Usos could definitely spark something. It's got to just go right to it. You know, the Usos and their new attitude against the Happy Go Lucky New Day. I think there's a great dichotomy there. They've wrestled before with the face heel alignment, you know, obviously was different. You know, the new badass Usos against the New Day, you know, there's a lot of potential there. And so, yeah, I like it a lot.
Well, yeah, and I think that there was even a flash of that dichotomy you're talking about just in the promo when they... Just the interaction that they had tonight, it was really well done. Because just the Usos kind of looking through the, you know, good vibes, positivity, the power of positivity from New Day was pretty amusing. And it plays really well for their new characters, too, which... can work out really well over the long run for everyone. Because, I mean, I think that New Day even came back strong for the most part. You know, they just kind of showed how serious they can be from time to time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that should be pretty fun. There just isn't really much meat on the bones since it, like we said, that the New Day just comes back and boom, they're on top, and I wouldn't have really expected much else. So those are the big three things. There has to be a big four thing that happened on SmackDown, right?
Randy Orton.
Oh, well, yeah. See, we were already talking about the whole women's match being the main event. This is something that I guess I just don't think about being in the main event, even though...
It still just doesn't feel right. I mean, I get what they're doing. I understand... The whole, I'm a marketing major and all that, you know, I get, you know, global reach and, you know, globalization, so I get what they're trying to do here, but there's still something missing here. And Randy Orton did hit this thing no favors by giving Jinder Mahal no respect, even for beating him.
Yeah, which is unsurprising to anyone that has followed Randy Orton for any length of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can maybe let other people talk about what undertones may or may not have been in Randy Orton's promo tonight, but the bottom line is he showed Jinder Mahal no respect at all. He treated him like a jobber who got lucky. And that's not going to make this work.
Right, it's one of those things I think we've talked about what the follow up would be. I guess we were probably all expecting a Jinder Mahal loss anyway, but the fact that they went with the win, you know, you really need to have the guy on the end of the loss really help you out there on the promo, and he did not at all. So
no, not at all. I watched the last two matches Jinder Mahal had before, you know, the match where he won the title and the match where he faced AJ Styles on SmackDown before. There is no third and fourth gear with Jinder Mahal, or his third and fourth gear isn't any good. I mean, that's the bottom line about all of this. The guy just doesn't have it.
Yeah, I mean, he's okay. I was gonna say he's better than some people, but
yeah.
You know, I don't know how long of a list that is either.
Yeah, I mean, I know they feel like they've got their fans, you know, here, Europe, whatever. If Jinder Mahal is the guy that they can use to flip an entire new country of millions of fans, then bravo. But the early stages of this have not been pretty to watch in my eyes.
Yeah, it's... Because he isn't... I guess on the other end there, too, Jinder Mahal has only done so much to, you know, aid himself. Because even if he can't cut it in the ring, maybe do a little bit better on the mic, and he's just been okay.
Yeah, he's like, just okay. I mean,
he hasn't dropped the ball terribly, but I'm not going, oh, I'm not looking for it over the fence either.
No, exactly. He's not doing that bad. He's okay. But there's now a standard, not even so much the promo anymore at this day and age. There's a standard of work for the main events. He just doesn't reach. You know, SmackDown's coming off of, you know, the long title reign of AJ Styles. Granted, we had the interlude with Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, and that wasn't particularly good. But it was more than what we've got so far with Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal.
Oh, yeah. As much as I find the ridiculousness of... oh, shit. Which one was that? Bray Wyatt. When the guy kind of wrestles a match, I enjoy his style, but I don't think they've really given him too many matches that haven't involved some type of... goofiness to it, Wyatt. So,
yeah.
You know, he's in some ways he's hard to judge match quality wise. Excuse me.
But yeah, no, yeah. Randy Orton, bottom line, Randy Orton did nothing tonight to get me excited about a match with him and Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, Jinder Mahal.
I'll say this: he certainly did nothing to prove anyone wrong who thinks he's not a good person in real life. It was just a fail all around.
Yeah, which is again, like I think that's one of the reasons why I could see, you know, the women in the main event like this.
Yeah,
because they didn't... Yeah, they did not... Well, yeah, they saved AJ Styles losing for the main event. So, you know, it wasn't top of the hour, though. So, I mean, they did put it in a prominent position. So, yeah, I guess if that covers SmackDown for the most part, we can saddle on over to Raw. And, I've got to admit I'm having, well, we could, start at their main event, and work our way backwards.
Well, Raw had some really, really good wrestling, especially in the two top matches, but nothing really felt like it had any stakes. Which is what happens when we have these multi-man main events at pay-per-views, and everyone wrestles everyone. Everyone gets a win one week and doesn't get get a week the next. And although I guess Samoa Joe did did get to be 2-0 going into going into Extreme Rules, so that was good. So he's at least got some solid momentum. But you know, it's good wrestling, good matches, but they didn't feel like they had any stakes going into Sunday.
The one thing that, and I can't believe that I even had to update my my browser to even think about it, but anytime now that there is This Is Your Life, insert wrestler name here, especially when I start watching it much later due to hockey, there is, I watched 1.5 persons talk, and I was like, yep, I'm out of here.
This has been good. Alexa was good during it, but the concept was faulty. It was too long. They obviously put no effort into finding actors to play these roles, or whatever they even were.
Right. Whether they were local wrestlers or local actors.
I'm pretty sure the old lady wasn't a local wrestler.
Fair enough. Maybe she's the manager somewhere on the indie scene.
Maybe she's a stunt granny.
Maybe she's a stunt granny. Yeah, the situation's just bad. Like, there are just certain things that, you know, you just, it was one segment that to me still was completely horrific, but got really, really high ratings. Because even the original one was not good to me. So, like, having this be, like, the, I don't know how many time that they've tried the same thing, it just keeps on devolving into a worse and worse segment as it goes along. It's just like, it got ratings once, guys. Can you please just, can you do me a favor here? You know, and I mean, the funny thing is that at least a little bit in the end, I was okay with how things ended up. You know, they're trying to show that Bailey can't put up with the punishment, and she hasn't done a good job of doing that so far. And I would suspect that leads to her finally winning on Sunday, but we shall find out then.
Yeah, we shall. I mean, apparently they were going for that these people were all real because of Bailey's reaction, her anger at what she was seeing when she finally came out. So this wasn't like an act that Alexa Bliss had put together. So
it didn't raise the stakes for their match at all.
No, it really didn't. Bailey, this is last week. Bailey got no promo time. You know, to talk about what this meant to her, who these people really are, if what they're saying were true. Granted, maybe it's best to just let this whole thing die and never mention it again. But when it got physical, it was good. It was really good. I like the little thing where Alexa Bliss had the kendo stick already under the table, you know, setting it up and nailing Bailey, one good time with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, obviously, now that the SmackDown women are getting a ladder match, Kane on a pole just doesn't sound as exciting.
Yeah, it didn't sound exciting at first, and it sounds even worse now.
the pole shenanigans are going to be what they are, but I think once the sticks actually involve, they should be able to, do the old hit hard to safe places routine, you know, get some welts going. It'll look physical.
Right. Yeah, I it's another one where, and I feel like we've mentioned this a bunch, is that match quality wise, I'm not really all that concerned.
No, not at all. No. It's fine. They had a good match at Payback. I think that they'll have a good match here. Once again, not sure exactly where they're going here. If they do want to keep Alexa Bliss as champion, or if, you know, Bailey's just gonna win it back here. Like, I don't know who's gonna win. I'm not necessarily excited about it, but I'm looking forward to it. It should be good.
And they, well, I suppose they, kicked off the show with, a couple of matches that are going to be split down the ways, which is, they had a six-man tag match with, the Hardys and Dean Ambrose taking on, The Miz and, Cesaro and Sheamus.
Yeah, I mean, that match was fine, although... How does a wrestler who talks about how big of a fan he was growing up in the Attitude Era, blah, 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 how the hell does he fuck up a Twist of Fate that badly? How do you take it like a swinging neck breaker? You should know what this is.
I don't know. I didn't pay that much attention. How it was that bad?
Yeah, I mean, he ended up on his back. He didn't take it face first. He rolled with it, which is not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to drop face down.
Oh, I missed that. Oh, well. Yeah, I guess it was kind of funny. That was probably quality wise, the one that I wasn't really thinking about, that made for good. It was, you know, the three way with Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, and Bray Wyatt.
Yeah,
stood out for me. And Seth Rollins, but I guess it just kind of goes like the whole Hardy thing is still. I mean, I saw the news that that Matt needs to clarify what the gimmick entails. Supposedly, within his lawsuit against TNA to get the gimmick back, like. It's not helping out at all. Like, it's not helping the tag team division move forward at all.
No. It really isn't. No, the Hardys are stuck in this in between their nostalgia act and the Broken Universe. You know, the Hardys are out there still. You know, without being able to do the broken antics, without worrying about being sued, they got to do their Hardy Boys routine from, you know, almost from 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, it's bad that it's 20 years ago and I remember all 20 years.
Yeah, it's not quite 20. It's not quite 20 yet.
No.
It's only about 18 since the Hardys actually started getting a push, I believe.
Yeah, well, okay, not good that I remember the whole 18th.
They gotta do all the Hardy Boys spots at an advanced age. Sunday, people are gonna expect a swanton off the top of that damn cage. And people will be disappointed if they don't get it.
Yeah. Well, I hope they don't get it for the sake of Jeff's body that has endured a lot over the years. So, yeah, I mean, and I guess this falls into that same category that I think that the match will be fine. Like, no matter what happens, I think that the match will be good. Like, Cesaro and Sheamus are good good to great wrestlers.
Yeah, they are. It should be good. I wouldn't be surprised to see a title change here. Before they lose again, there's nowhere for Cesaro and Sheamus to go after this. They're stuck with Cesaro as a full heel, so you've got to run with them as a tag team for a little while longer. So I guess they can win the tag titles, although it would make more sense to have the Hardys lose the tag titles when you can use the loss of the tag titles as the impetus for the re-breaking of the Hardys. But I don't know. Doesn't sound like we're there yet.
Yeah, it certainly does not seem that way. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I don't think that is going to get resolved by the end of the evening either, or by the end of by the time the pay-per-view happens either.
No, I've heard still heard nothing about a trial date or anything, or hearing date or anything. So yeah, no, I don't think. Yeah, I don't think it will,
And Miz and Ambrose, for the most part, they have done a good job. This week was just kind of it was something of an off week for both of them.
Yeah.
So, because they didn't really get that much promo time, either of them, really.
Not particularly. No, it wasn't a week they were really focused on. I mean, they've got their angle. They've technically been feuding for, including SmackDown time, over 6 months now. So it's again, they've got their story. They've got good chemistry, including a pretty good chemistry in the ring. When you do the stipulation that title can't change hands of disqualification, sometimes that's a crapshoot as far as what kind of silliness that can involve. And you know, on a show called like Extreme Rules, that should be perfect for a guy like Dean Ambrose. You know, he's in a match where he's essentially handcuffed, and they got to make that a part of the storyline.
And I guess the one thing that's kind of been weird about that, just in general to me, is just that everyone knows that it was at least a little bit, in a way, retaliation what Ambrose did. But usually, I don't know. I mean, I know The Miz caused the DQ last week, but you know, Ambrose doesn't have a history of them. He's not starting a new history of them right now. I guess it's a stipulation. It's just like Extreme Rules. It just doesn't seem like an extreme rule. Sometimes this is a thought that's a little bit better, is that usually they do something else that might cause the person to cause a DQ. Like, there's something else leading up to the match that The Miz keeps on causing Ambrose to snap, and that causes a DQ. Like, The Miz hasn't really driven Ambrose crazy at all. You know?
No. They really haven't had time or taking the time that they have to really tell a story. To really tell the story that The Miz has, they've got their history on SmackDown, stuff involving Renee Young, but they don't bring that up anymore. It's easy to kind of forget that, how much history there is between Ambrose and Miz, and how much Miz has pissed off Ambrose in the past, because on this run, it's really that big of a deal.
Oh, right. Yeah, so I don't know. It was kind of interesting to me. They didn't really dwell on it for too long during the show. But the information that Corey Graves had to give to Kurt Angle, is that one of those we're changing the GM on Raw again messages because Kurt Angle's going to wrestle one match and this is just the start of all of it? Or yeah, is this just something that I should not pay any attention to and just move on along?
No, I mean, obviously, it's supposed to mean something. I'm not sure exactly what, not sure where they're going. I don't think they'll replace Kurt Angle this soon, so I don't think that will be the end result of it. But no, it's a storyline for Kurt. Obviously, someone's got something on him, and yeah, we're gonna watch this play out over the next coming weeks and months. Maybe it'll lead to Kurt's return match at SummerSlam. Maybe it'll lead to something else, or Stephanie coming back, or it was pretty out of left field. So,
yeah, I guess it's pretty pretty strange to me that on a show that to me seemed like it was mostly throwaway angle wise with good quality matches, that something like that would start up. So I just found that kind of interesting because we did touch on it at least a little bit, the Samoa Joe Finn Balor Bray Wyatt match that was quite enjoyable and they gave it plenty of time.
Yeah, got plenty of time. You know, everyone got their shit in, as they say. Finn Balor looked really, really great during the match. He was on top of his game. They let, you know, he hit his big move, and he was about to get the win, and then Samoa Joe threw him into the post. These back first bumps into the post are starting to be, or might be the new, insert move on the apron, you know, because we're seeing it a lot more lately, guys taking the post. You know, back first. Seen it multiple times this week. I just wanted to throw that out there. But no, Samoa Joe got an opportunistic win. He also got to tap out Seth Rollins last week, so Joe's on something of a win streak with momentum going to the show. That's good. Everyone's kind of had their moments in this build up. I mean, and it's been said. It's been said that WWE has their plans for SummerSlam, but right now they're just doing all this multi-way match stuff and just
to avoid everything for SummerSlam.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's just keep the machine running and just, you know, build TV time with everyone wrestling everyone over and over again. Yeah, but you know they've given everyone, all five of these guys, their moments in this build up. I can't say I've got a solid favorite mind even.
Oh.
Except that I don't think it'll be Roman Reigns. I guess I'm saying I don't think it'll be Bray Wyatt either. But between Balor, Rollins, Joe, I guess I don't really know. I can't say I have a solid favorite who it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Jeremy and I got to talk about it a little bit last week. It's still kind of interesting that Paul Heyman came out and only specifically addressed Finn Balor in the whole situation.
Yeah, that was very exciting. I think it's talked about that obviously, but yeah, that was very interesting and something very, very different, very out of left field to add into this. I mean,
I don't know if that ends up being something for later down the line.
Yeah, that might be something that they plant the seeds for later because, oh, let's be pretty bluntly honest here. Brock Lesnar's July opponent at Great Balls of Fire is likely there to just lose on the way to SummerSlam.
I would be pretty shocked, no matter anyone. That's why some of these guys kind of seem like they're not going to be the pick, or why I almost lean towards Seth Rollins being the pick.
Yeah, Seth could have a good match with Brock Lesnar and then still lose. You guess you could go with, if they're not as high on Samoa Joe and don't think that, to WWE brass, it's not the wet dream it is to, a lot of smart marks. So it's like, let's just throw this match. Yeah, we can just throw this match out there.
Right.
It'll be fun, yeah, whatever, but no one's going to believe that Joe could beat Brock, and he won't. So maybe it could be Joe. I feel like they've got bigger plans for Finn Balor, so I don't know if they want to sacrifice him just yet. There's a lot of question as to whether or not Braun Strowman is really going to be out for as long as they say he will be, whether that's the match they want to do at SummerSlam.
It's just kind of interesting. There's a lot of stuff kind of going around, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, I suppose.
The pieces are there for a good run in summer through SummerSlam, definitely.
I think the one thing that maybe attracts me is that at least Seth Rollins has a little bit of history with Lesnar. There's something to play off of. And there is some credibility to it all, at least, that he might be able to pull off the win.
Still wouldn't call anywhere near a lock, but yeah, I think Seth is probably the right pick and the most likely pick.
So, just because Joe just doesn't feel like he's been up long enough to take him on. Like, I'd like to see them, let him stomp on some people before he takes on Lesnar. At least more so than he has to this point. Because it's kind of funny that he hasn't really gotten too many squash matches. Like, he's a guy that could use this squash match here and there on TV. Because, I mean, a lot of fans know it, but they should see it, too.
Right, yeah.
I'm trying to think, well, I guess another thing that happened that was of interest to me is Big Cass protesting a little too much, or is the revival really at the root of all of their ills?
You know what? That has actually been an interesting storyline developing once again. It's got some creativity to it, some subtlety to it. They're playing up so hard that the revival is suspect that it's, in the end it probably won't be them. But then again, maybe that's what they want you to think, and it still will be. I think that this could the big calf, those protest too much. That there might be something to do that. Interesting that how they were using Corey Graves throughout the evening as more than just a generic talking head, almost more like a Jesse Ventura, Bobby Heenan, Jerry Lawler type character who would actually does you know, meddle in storylines to a certain degree and stir shit up.
Oh. Yeah, since he was the one that talked to Kurt Angle about his aforementioned news. That was certainly the first part of his meddling of the evening.
Yeah, you know, the way he delivered the line about Big Cass, how Booker T, you know, reacted to it, I thought that was very well played. You know, because then there was like a moment of awkward silence there, then they threw it with another video package, and then, you know, very spontaneously it felt, you know, Big Cass on set, you know, running Corey Graves. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, it's at least interesting. There aren't a lot of things. It's just like, oh, they're kind of playing it both ways. Like you said, like, because even in the promo with the Revival, Scott Dawson was talking like they were already guilty. Like, you know, it's that automatic, like, losing in your hometown. Anytime someone acts guilty, acts like they're trying to cover something up, they usually are covering something up. So, you know, I guess that was the other interesting part about it. It's just like, usually the heels would be like, nah, man, I'd come out and say it if I was doing that. And you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, he would. And you just kind of blow it off a little bit. In this case, it was kind of interesting that they acted guilty to start with.
Right, yeah, it was interesting. Once again, everyone's playing their parts pretty well here. Even throwing in the possibility that Big Cass is the one who keeps attacking Enzo. It's interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out.
Was there anything else on Raw that needs to be covered?
I don't think so.
Well, both of us, last week you were off because you were at Fozzie.
Yes, I was, and I had a pretty good time. Fozzie is definitely a fun live experience. Jericho's certainly a charismatic showman, which to a level that makes up for him maybe not necessarily being the best lead singer in rock and roll, but no, they're a fun live show. I haven't been to a lot of hard rock shows and clubs in my time. The first two acts were incredibly loud and screaming and. Yeah, in a small club like that, speakers right there, very close to the front. Yeah, my ears were ringing for a couple of days.
You sound like more of an old man than I do. Of course, I don't try to get to the front of the stage anymore.
This is kind of a special thing. Wouldn't mind it, you know. I did end up getting to shake Jericho's hand, you know. Which is cool, so yeah, I don't think I need to necessarily. I'm certainly not into, you know, screaming unintelligible rock to any great degree, so I don't know if I think I'll ever visit that place or too many places like it ever again. But it was an interesting experience, and I'm damn glad I got to see Fozzie live once.
Oh, yeah. I guess I don't know what the names of the bands that are opening for them, but I'm sure that they're not terribly popular either.
No, it's King with a Y and...
Oh! King's opening for them?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, I've definitely heard of...
And the lead singer of King started chastising the crowd for not being into them, and because they're, you know, they were a wrestling crowd waiting for Chris Jericho.
Oh, man, that's too bad. I enjoy those guys.
Yeah, they were certainly better than the first, for my taste, they were certainly better than the first than the Sons of Texas band. That was just loud, unintelligible gibberish to me. That doesn't resonate with me at all.
Yeah, well, and it's certainly one thing that, as my either Throwback Thursday or Flashback Friday posts of recent have gone, all the concerts that I went to in small clubs, at least A, I was a little bit younger, but yeah, I heard some incredibly loud bands, so... I didn't think that they were that loud. The venue that we went to see Fozzy at probably fits about 3,000 or so. Was that the size that? No,
3,000. It may have fit 500 on a good night, and there's about 150 there. They were. It was a Tuesday night. They were in Flint. Not anywhere near the Detroit area. I mean, it's the Machine Shop. It's something of a well-known club. Uh-huh. I guess it's the type of place you play on the way up or you play on the way down, and sometimes maybe in the middle, you know, of your career.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
it's definitely, it was interesting to be there. It felt like a rock club. You think a rock club is supposed to feel like. It was a whole experience of being there, but it's Tuesday night, you're an hour away from the metropolitan area, and you're, let's be honest, in one of the poorest cities in America. It's just like, it's probably not the best location to do a show like this.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they got anywhere close to the 3,000, and I'm pretty sure that they... Because the Newport here in town is one of the venues, but they have a habit of closing the upstairs now, even though they have a balcony level. So it tends to be more like a 1,000 to 2,000 people at most kind of club. But it does seem a bit larger. But I know the type of venue that you're talking about. Peabody's Down Under. Well, actually, 500 probably would have been generous if you fit 500 people in there. It would have been pretty rocking in there if they had 500 people. But yeah, it's probably more around the Odeon size level. Okay. Anyway. Enough for my own flashbacks, but yeah, I guess I found the concert about the same. Jericho is very entertaining. I don't think he's a particularly good singer. I really like the band that plays with him. I like their other band called Stuck Mojo, so it makes it pretty easy to get into it. They basically just have a lead singer difference,
right?
So I do think that they are quality musicians. Cool. So I'm glad you enjoyed that, and your ears aren't ringing now. Then you're
no
good.
No. I've been good for a few days. I've been good for a few days now.
Well, I went to go see Pro Wrestling Live. Ohio over the weekend, and that was a quite enjoyable 2.5 hours or so. It was a quick moving show. They started on time, which was nice.
Oh, that's amazing. I have no idea what that's like in the East around here.
Well, I've got to admit, more times than not, I'm used to things not starting on time either.
Not starting out time, somehow going three or four hours. Because everyone thinks they're running WrestleMania.
Yeah, like, we were in there, we were out of there, everything was enjoyable. I'll have to do a write-up, but there's this one act that I hadn't seen before that His name is Super Oprah. And, yes, it's a male cross-dresser. Is the character, and he's a large black gentleman.
I already love it.
This guy really, like, I mean, he kind of had a Rikishi moveset, you know, so you have the stink face, you also have the, since he has his chest bound up, like that of a woman, he uses that, it is an offensive maneuver, putting the head in between the old boobies. So it was a very, one of the more entertaining acts that I've seen, to be honest with you, at some of these indies. Like, I don't know how far you get with that act.
No. Yeah, in the Detroit indies, we've got a similar act. A good guy. I've actually met him a handful of times. His gimmick is, he's Sweet Willie Watts. It's just over the top, stereotypical gay man. It's, you know, plays it like a pervert, like a total pervert who, you know, feels up his opponents in the ring, and it's just like,
oh yeah,
this is the type of act that's, you're gonna offend everyone, liberal, conservative, you're gonna offend everyone with this act. There's no upside for this act. So I guess you better, you know, enjoy your life as a weekend warrior and have a good 9-to-5 during the weekend, and hope and pray to God that your boss doesn't find out what you do on the weekends.
So like I said, starts on time. I think we were only there for 2.5 hours, so we didn't feel like we were there for forever and a day. Because they can have a tendency, like you said, to run 4 hours.
Yeah.
A lot of the people I had seen before, it's some of the other local shows, and they were all, they're all pretty good wrestlers. Like, I don't think anyone is, I guess the one thing that was actually interesting about this one is that, I know that the guy, Tommy Chill there has, an actual class in town, so they had some of the graduates wrestle, and that could be something that I don't feel like I've seen at the New Ohio wrestling shows, is, you know, an academy and someone actually teaching wrestling, and I'm not saying that I think anyone's bound for the WWE yet. But there obviously is that potential, like that someone gets trained and moves on along to bigger and better things. So it'll, you know, I guess it's kind of fun. Like, I'm glad that more of these indies are popping up, and I always enjoy doing the interviews too, so that we can try and kayfabe things a little bit in life, because that's more fun. I don't need everyone being too personal.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's just kind of fun to let people run with their gimmicks when they're when they're at that stage of things.
Right. No, I get it. Yeah. But no, I'm glad you had a good time. Glad that there's some indies out there, you know, putting on good shows. Really. Is that working to get to open on time and not go too long and have a professional show, and, you know, everyone's out there to have a good time? No, it's good.
So yeah, I guess I'll close things out. Bell Time Beer, since I had some foam issues and it slowed us down from starting recording, I will continue my tour of Virginia with, it's Old Ox Brewery Golden Ox, which is a Belgian-style golden ale, and it's pretty damn tasty. I was a little surprised by the hop bill, just because the Columbus hops tend to be kind of hoppy and kind of bitter. So I was surprised they were used in such a light beverage and low hop beverage. But everything turned out really well. I killed that pretty early in the show. So I will definitely give that one a higher than 3.5 rating on Untappd. I'm not sure if it quite gets the 4 territory, but, you know, it's definitely better than average. So I've enjoyed. We'll see. I guess maybe I should come up with themes for the month. That's what I was thinking about before the show. Because I really could have done a month of all Virginia beers if I had thought it through first. Oh well, whatever. Bell Time Beer on the old Instagram. So yeah, at DeFrango11, at Chris Calamita Brand, at Stunt Granny, rate and review us on iTunes if you so please. It might get us something. Who knows? Maybe a contract with someone big time. So, yeah, for us, have a good night.
Later.